At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Story 1. I grew up around the Navajo Nation, just east of Kayenta. And most of my life, I didn't buy into the old ghost stories. My grandmother always told me not to wander near Sheep Creek after sundown, said it was where the Nightwalkers traveled. She never explained much, just told me to stay inside when the sky turned red. I used to laugh it off. That was until the night in late October, when I went out there with 2 friends and learned the hard way why people didn't mess around with that place. It started earlier that week when one of my friends, Mike, said his uncle lost 3 sheep in the area. He asked if we'd help look for tracks. We were all off work that Friday, so we drove out in the afternoon. The land was dry and open, with the creek running low enough to hop across in spots. We found no tracks at first, but as the sun started setting, the air seemed heavier, almost like before a storm. Only thing was, there were no clouds, no wind, just this weird stillness that made even our voices sound strange, like the air was swallowing the sound before it could carry. The first odd thing happened when we were cutting through a shallow wash. Mike stopped suddenly, said he heard someone call his name from across the creek. We stood quiet for a few seconds. Sure enough, I heard it too. His name drawn out, almost sing-song but faint, like it was coming from far away. The only problem was the voice didn't echo right. Out there, sound usually bounced off the rock faces, but this one was flat, like it was right next to us. We looked across the creek, saw nothing but dry grass and rock. We decided to turn back toward the truck before dark. As we were walking, I noticed something strange ahead, a single blackbird standing dead still on a fence post. Birds usually scatter when people get close, but this one didn't move. I thought maybe it was dead, but when I got within 10 feet, its head snapped toward me. I swear its eyes didn't catch the light at all. No reflection, just dull black pits. It opened its beak like it was going to make a sound, but nothing came out. Then it flew off toward the creek, and I felt my stomach drop for no reason I could explain. We were halfway to the truck when we heard what I can only describe as a long, dragging sound behind us, like something heavy being pulled across dirt. We turned, but the trail was empty. Mike said maybe it was a cow or horse out of sight, but it was moving too slow, too deliberate. The sound stopped whenever we stopped, then started again when we walked. None of us said it out loud, but I think we all realized it was matching our pace. By the time we reached the truck, the sun had dipped below the horizon. That's when I saw it. Across the road, maybe 50 yards away, there was a figure standing in the open. Tall, thin, not moving. The weird thing was, even in the fading light, I couldn't make out any details. No clothes, no face, just a solid dark shape. At first I thought it was a person, but the longer I looked, the less it seemed human. Its shoulders were too narrow, its head tilted at an unnatural angle, like it was listening. Mike must have seen it too, because he told us to get in the truck right now. We piled in, and as he started the engine, I looked back. The figure was closer. Too close. It hadn't walked there. It was just suddenly at the edge of the road, still tilting its head. We peeled out fast and I didn't look back again. When we got to Mike's uncle's place, we tried to laugh it off, say it was probably a trick of the light. But that night, when I was home in bed, I woke up around 3 a.m. to the sound of something brushing against my bedroom window. Slow, deliberate, like fingers tapping the glass. My curtains were drawn, and I didn't want to look, but curiosity got me. When I pulled them back, the yard was empty, except for one blackbird on the ground staring straight up at me. I blinked and it was gone. I haven't been back to Sheep Creek since. I still tell myself there could have been an explanation. Maybe we were tired. Maybe it was just shadows playing tricks on us. But deep down, I know something out there followed us home that night. My grandmother just shook her head when I told her. She said some things travel along the wind after dark, and once they notice you, they don't forget. Story 2. I grew up on Yakima land in Washington, near a stretch of river that always had a strange reputation. My grandmother used to tell me not to fish there after dark. She said it was a place where the old spirits still walked, the ones that came before our people even had names for them. I didn't put much stock into it as a kid, but the river always had an odd quiet to it at night, like even the frogs and crickets didn't want to make a sound. Last spring, I decided to camp out there for a night with my cousin Jared. We were just looking for a quiet spot to fish and get away from the noise of town. The plan was simple. Fish until we got tired, cook what we caught, crash in the tent, head back in the morning. We set up camp just before sunset. The water was like glass, barely moving, and the air had that heavy smell of wet earth after a light rain. Jared strung his line while I got the fire going, and for the first hour, everything felt fine. We were talking about random things, work, family, some old hunting trips, and it was just like any other night. But as the sun dropped behind the hills, the wind died completely. I remember it hit me all at once that the trees weren't swaying anymore. Not a branch moving, and the river stopped making that soft lapping sound against the bank. It was the kind of silence that made you suddenly aware of your own breathing. We tried to ignore it, but little things started to catch our attention. The fire smoke was drifting in one direction, then suddenly swirling back the other way, like something invisible was walking through it. Jared thought it was just wind shifting, but there wasn't a single leaf moving. A little later, we both swore we heard someone walking along the gravel path behind us. Slow steps, crunching, then stopping, then starting again. We shined our flashlights, but the beam only hit a wall of trees. No eye shine, no movement, nothing. Around midnight, the first real strange thing happened. We heard a drum, not loud, not like a powwow drum, but a steady, single beat every few seconds, coming from somewhere downstream. At first, we figured maybe another camp was set up further along the river, but it didn't sound like it was getting closer or farther. It just stayed at the same low distance, perfectly even, with no variation in rhythm. We sat there listening for maybe 15 minutes, trying to figure out if it was echoing from the canyon walls or if it was closer than it seemed. Then without any kind of fade out, it just stopped mid-beat. We decided to call it for the night and climbed into the tent. I couldn't sleep though. Around 2 a.m, I started hearing water splashing, like someone was wading into the river just a few feet from our tent. Jared was asleep, breathing slow and steady, but I was frozen listening. The splashing stopped, then started again, this time lighter, like smaller steps. And then, after a pause, I heard it right outside the tent. The sound of water dripping onto fabric, slow and deliberate. I didn't move. I didn't even breathe for a few seconds. Eventually, it stopped. Not long after that, Jared jolted awake, said he thought he saw a shadow pass over the tent, even though there was no light source outside. We both sat there, wide awake, just listening. That's when the drum came back, but this time it wasn't distant. It sounded like it was coming from right behind the tent. Deep, hollow, each beat sending a small vibration through the ground. We unzipped the flap just enough to peek out, but there was nothing. The fire had burned low, casting just enough light to see the bare patch of dirt behind our camp, and it was empty. No footprints, no person, nothing that could make that sound. But the moment we looked out, the drumming stopped again. Instant silence, like it had been cut off mid-beat. At dawn, we packed up fast. Jared said his fishing line, which had been neatly coiled by the fire, was now stretched out across the ground, like someone had walked away with it and then dropped it. I found small wet spots in the dirt, spaced almost like footprints, but they stopped halfway toward the river and didn't lead anywhere else. When I told my uncle about it later, he just shook his head and said the river has its own keepers, and sometimes they let you know you're not welcome. Jared still thinks maybe someone was messing with us. Though neither of us can explain how they could keep that perfect drum beat without being seen, or how they moved around without leaving more prints. I don't fish there after dark anymore. Story 3. I grew up on the Flathead Reservation in Montana, and like most folks around here, I've heard all the old stories. Some are told to scare kids into behaving, others to warn you about places you shouldn't go alone. Most of them roll off you after a while because they become part of the background noise of the land. The creeks, the trees, the wind through the grass. But there's one I'd never really paid attention to until last winter, when I learned firsthand why certain parts of the mountains are left alone after dark. It started with what should have been a simple job. I'd been helping out a neighbor, a rancher who lost a few head of cattle over the season, probably to wolves. He asked if I'd take his snowmobile up into the back range to check one of the old wire gates and see if it had been torn down. The route took me close to an old logging road that hasn't been used in decades. People say the forest has been reclaiming it since before I was born. My grandmother used to call it the Path of the Hollow, though she never explained the name. It was a
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew?
With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
About a 4-mile ride from the main trail, and I figured if I started mid-afternoon, I'd be back before the sun dipped. But the weather shifted fast, like it does here, and by the time I reached the gate, a gray haze had crept in. It wasn't a normal fog. It moved strangely, slow and low, hugging the snow instead of rising. At first, I thought it was just cold air pooling in the low spots, but when I killed the engine, it didn't behave like mist at all. It had a weight to it, and the silence that came with it was thick enough to make my ears feel stuffed. I could still see the tree line, but the shadows between the trunks seemed darker than they should have been, almost like they were bending inwards. I checked the gate, found one of the posts leaning, and knelt to straighten it. That's when I noticed something odd. The snow around the post wasn't smooth. It looked like something had pressed down on it in a perfect ring, like a giant handprint without fingers. The longer I stared, the more I realized there were more of them, faint but definite, forming a kind of half circle behind me. I stood up, and that's when the sound started. Not footsteps, but something like a branch being pulled slowly through the snow. Dragging, deliberate. I told myself it was just a deer, maybe an elk, but every hair on the back of my neck disagreed. I turned toward the noise and saw nothing but the fog. Still, the dragging kept getting closer until it stopped completely, just at the edge where my sight failed. I don't know why I did it, but I called out, more to break the silence than anything else. My voice sounded small, swallowed by the mist. Right after that, something moved. It didn't step forward. It rose, tall, taller than any man, too narrow in the shoulders, head tilted in a way that reminded me of a crow sizing up roadkill. I couldn't make out features, just the suggestion of them, a face too pale for a hunter in winter gear, eyes that caught the dim light like ice, and what I thought at first was a torn coat fluttering in the breeze, but the air was dead still. I told myself to walk back to the snowmobile, slow and steady, but the first step I took was into one of those ring-shaped impressions, and my boot sank deeper than the snow surface, like there was nothing underneath it. The cold that shot through my leg didn't feel like snowmelt. It felt like sticking your hand into deep water in the middle of the night. I yanked my foot free and didn't bother with slow or steady anymore. I ran. I could hear it behind me then, moving without the crunch of snow, just that dragging sound over and over. The fog was thicker now, and the landmarks I'd used to find my way in were gone. For a few seconds, I swear the trail twisted. Trees I didn't remember seeing before, slopes going the wrong way. Every instinct I had was screaming to not look back, but about 20 yards from the snowmobile, I did. I wish I hadn't. It was closer now, close enough that I could see its face clearly, or where a face should have been. There was a mouth but no lips, just a dark gash, and when it opened, there was nothing inside. No teeth, no tongue, just black, as if the opening went on forever. The rest of it seemed to ripple, like cloth in water, but there was no wind to move it. The dragging sound I'd been hearing wasn't from its feet. It came from the long, uneven shapes trailing behind it, vanishing into the fog like roots into soil. I reached the snowmobile, cranked the starter so hard I thought I'd break it, and tore down the slope without checking if it followed. By the time I hit the main trail, the fog was gone, like it had never been there. The air was sharp and clear, and I could hear the creek running again. Back at the ranch, the owner laughed when I told him I got turned around in the mist. He said the logging road up there does strange things to compasses, something to do with iron in the ground. I didn't argue. Later that night, I mentioned the strange rings in the snow to my grandmother. She didn't laugh. She said there are places where the earth remembers being whole, and when something is taken from it, trees, stone, water, it leaves the ground hollow. Sometimes the hollow calls things back to it. She told me never to go down that road in winter again. I didn't tell her I'd already decided that on my own. Story 4. I grew up in northern Nebraska, in a small town right on the edge of the Santee Sioux Reservation. My mom's side is enrolled Santee Dakota, though we live just outside the official boundary. Out there, it's mostly flat farmland and old windbreaks, rows of trees planted to keep the snow from swallowing the fields. This happened 2 summers ago, early August, during harvest prep. I'd driven out to help my uncle clear some old fence posts on his land. His property bordered a stretch of cornfield that wasn't his, land leased by some big farming company. He always said weird stuff happened near that field, especially late summer, but I'd never paid much attention. The first odd thing was the smell. It hit me as soon as I got out of my truck. Strong, like wet dirt mixed with metal, almost like blood, but heavier. My uncle noticed it too, said maybe a deer had died out in the row somewhere. We didn't see anything though, and it was too hot to go wandering the whole field. Around noon, we took a break under the shade of the windbreak trees. That's when I realized how quiet it was. No cicadas, no wind, not even the rustle of corn leaves in the breeze. Just still air pressing against you, making your skin feel too tight. I mentioned it, but my uncle just shook his head and told me not to dwell on it. It got weirder in the afternoon. While I was pulling nails from an old post, I heard what sounded like someone whistling way off in the corn. Just a short, sharp note. I figured it was a bird at first, but it came again. 3 slow whistles in a row, all the same pitch, almost too perfect. When I looked at my uncle, he was standing still, staring at the rows. He told me without looking away that if I heard it again, I shouldn't whistle back. I didn't ask why. By late afternoon, the light had that strange, too bright glow it gets before a storm, except the sky was clear. The shadows stretched long and wrong. I kept catching movement at the edges of my vision, shapes between the corn stalks, gone when I turned my head. I thought maybe it was heat shimmer, but it made my stomach knot. We wrapped up around 6, but before we left, my uncle asked me to help check one of the old irrigation ditches near the corn's edge. The grass was tall there, and I could smell that same metallic scent, stronger than before. That's when we found the tracks, bare human footprints in the mud, each one at least twice the size of my own, spaced far apart like something running or leaping. They led straight into the cornfield, but there was no sign of them coming back out. We stood there for a while, neither of us saying much. The sun dipped lower, and just when I thought we should leave, it came again, the whistle, closer this time. It didn't sound like it came from one spot. It was all around us, like the corn itself was carrying it. My chest went cold. My uncle grabbed my arm and told me we were leaving. As we walked back to the truck, the rows of corn closest to us began to sway, even though there was no wind. The motion followed us all the way to the gate. That night, I couldn't shake it. I kept hearing the whistle in my head, over and over. I finally called my uncle, and he told me something he hadn't mentioned before. His grandfather used to warn about the whistlers that moved through the fields at dusk. Said they weren't people, but something older. Something that didn't like to be noticed. If you answered the whistle, they could find you, even years later. He told me not to go back to that part of the field. I didn't argue. But every summer since, when the corn is high, I swear I've heard faint whistling on the wind when I drive past at night. Maybe it's just birds. Maybe it's the wind. But I don't slow down to check. Story 5. I grew up in the southern Montana, close to the Crow Reservation. My mom was Crow, my dad wasn't native, and most of my childhood was spent between the town and my grandparents' place near the Bighorn River. Summers were slow out there. Hot days, cool nights, and the sound of the river moving steady just past the tree line. My grandma always warned me about playing too close to the water alone. She'd tell me about the river woman, something like a water spirit, who called people to her when the sun was low. She said if you heard her voice, you'd follow it right into the current and never come back. I thought it was just her way of keeping me safe from drowning. When I was 16, I started going fishing down by the river in the evenings. That summer, the water was high from snowmelt. The banks were muddy and soft, and the air smelled like wet earth. I remember one night in late July, I was walking along the shallows with my line in, watching the ripples from the current. I heard what I thought was someone singing, soft, low, like a woman humming an old song. I figured it was coming from one of the other houses along the river, maybe someone sitting outside on their porch. But when I stopped walking, the humming stopped too. A few days later, I went back out around dusk. This time I noticed footprints along the mud by the bank. Not boots or shoes, bare feet, small ones like a woman's, pressed deep into the wet ground. They led right to the water, but there were no prints coming back. It struck me as strange, but I told myself maybe someone had been swimming earlier that day. The thing was, the water was freezing cold from the mountain runoff. Nobody swam in it until late August. Over the next couple weeks, I started noticing other things. My fishing gear would be moved when I left it on the bank. One evening, I found my tackle box open with all the lures lined up neatly in the mud, hooks glinting like teeth in the fading light. Another night, my flashlight started flickering when I was walking back through the trees, even though I'd put fresh batteries in earlier that day. Every time the beam dimmed, I swore I could see a shadow moving alongside me, just at the edge of the tree line. The night it happened, there was a storm building to the west, making the sky bruise purple. I was alone by the river, lines in the water, when I felt that strange stillness. The kind where all the bugs and birds go quiet at the same time. The air got heavy, and the smell of rain was sharp in my nose. I heard the humming again, closer this time. It wasn't coming from downriver or upriver. It was coming from the water directly in front of me. I leaned forward, trying to see past the reflection of the clouds. That's when I noticed her. At first, I thought it was a branch or a tangle of weeds, but then it shifted. A pale face just under the surface, eyes open, hair streaming around it like ink and water. Her lips were moving, but the song didn't sound like it was coming through the water. It was in my head, and it made my chest feel tight, like I'd forgotten how to breathe. I must have stepped forward without realizing, because my boots sank into the mud right at the water's edge. The current swirled, pulling harder than it should have that close to shore. I remember thinking if I just took one more step, I could reach her. Then I felt a hand on my shoulder, hard, yanking me back so fast I stumbled and landed in the grass. My flashlight, still in my other hand, flared bright again for just a second. There was no one behind me, no tracks in the mud except my own. I scrambled up and ran through the trees, not stopping until I saw my grandparents' porch light through the branches. My grandma was sitting there, looking out at the yard like she'd been waiting. I tried to tell her what I saw, but she cut me off and said she'd told me not to go near the water after sunset. She brought out a bundle of sage and lit it, waving the smoke over me, muttering in Crow under her breath. The next morning, I went back with my dad. We found the spot where my boots had been in the mud, deep impressions like I'd been leaning forward, and a long, smooth groove right into the water, like something had been dragged or pulled. My dad said maybe the storm winds had pushed a log through there. 2 weeks later, a man from town went missing. They found his truck near the boat launch, but no sign of him. The search teams pulled his body out of the river 3 days later, miles downstream. They said he'd slipped on the rocks and got caught in the current. But my grandma said the river woman had called someone else that night. I still fish sometimes, but only in daylight. And if I hear singing, I don't stick around to figure out where it's coming from. Story 6. I started walking faster, the sound of my boots crunching wet leaves louder than it should have been. The silence pressed in, like the forest was holding its breath. At one point, I thought I saw movement in my periphery, just a flicker of something slipping between the trees. But when I turned, there was nothing. My first thought was pigs, but the hairs on my neck stood up, and that wasn't the way you react to pigs. About 10 minutes later, I got that feeling people talk about, like someone's following you. You can try to shake it off, convince yourself you're just jumpy, but your body knows. I kept glancing over my shoulder. The mist was getting thicker, swirling in shapes that looked almost human before they faded. I told myself it was just wind, even though I couldn't feel a breeze. A little farther down, I passed a spot I swear I'd already walked through. Same fallen ohia branch, same cluster of ferns bent at the exact same angle. It didn't make sense because the trail was pretty clear, just a single track cutting through the undergrowth. I thought maybe I'd gotten turned around in the fog, so I checked my GPS. It said I was still heading toward the truck, but my stomach tightened in a way I didn't like. That's when I heard it. Soft footsteps behind me, just off the trail. Not heavy, more like bare feet on damp earth. They would start when I walked and stop when I did. At one point, I froze completely and heard one extra step after I'd stopped. My skin crawled. I wanted to call out, but my throat felt tight, and some old part of my brain told me not to acknowledge whatever it was. I picked up the pace, nearly jogging, when I caught a smell I can only describe as old seawater and rot, like something washed up and had been left in the sun too long. The stink came in waves, strong for a few seconds, then gone. I didn't see anything dead nearby. The forest was so quiet I started to hear little noises in my own head, my heartbeat in my ears, the blood rushing. And then, underneath all that, I swore I heard a faint humming. Not a tune I recognized, just a low rhythmic sound, like someone was humming through closed lips. It seemed to come from up ahead, but the mist made it impossible to judge distance. I was sweating even though the air was cool. Every instinct screamed at me to get out, so I focused on putting one foot in front of the other. When I finally saw a break in the trees that meant the road was close, I felt this rush of relief until I noticed something on the ground. It was a single wet footprint, barefoot, facing toward me. I stared at it for a long moment. The edges were too sharp for it to be old, and the water in it hadn't started soaking into the soil yet. I wanted to believe it was some random hiker, but the trail was narrow and I hadn't passed a soul all day. That's when I realized the humming had stopped. I made it to the truck without looking back, threw my gear in the bed, and got in. My hands were shaking so bad I fumbled the keys. I didn't even bother taking off my muddy boots, just drove. I was a few miles down the road before I finally glanced in the rear view. For half a second, I thought I saw someone standing at the edge of the trees where the trail met the road, tall, motionless. I didn't go back to Kamaku for over a year after that. When I told my cousin Micah, he said I was lucky. He told me stories about the old people, about spirits called the Huakaipo, the night marchers, warriors who walk certain paths after dark. If you cross them, you're supposed to lay flat on the ground, face down, and never look. I told him it was probably just my brain playing tricks in the fog. But the thing is, I've been in those mountains my whole life, and I know what normal feels like up there. That day, it wasn't normal. And sometimes, late at night, when the trade winds die down and it gets real still, I think I hear that same low humming, just faint enough to make me wonder if I imagined it. Story 7. I've lived in Wailuku my whole life, right on the island of Maui. I'm not native Hawaiian myself, but I married into a local family, and over the years I've learned there are certain things you just don't play with here. Some of it's said in passing, like warnings about not whistling at night or staying away from certain places after dark. Others are more serious, hayas, ancient burial grounds, certain trees with histories older than anyone can trace. The old-timers don't joke about it, and I've never seen them exaggerate. There's this unspoken understanding that these aren't just campfire stories for tourists. You don't disrespect what's here. You don't go looking for trouble. And even if you don't believe in that stuff, you'd be stupid to test it. This was back in 2019. My wife's uncle, Kaleo, had just passed away. It was a big loss for the family. They held the funeral at a chapel near the Wailuku River, and after the service, everyone moved to a hotel not far from there. The family had rented out a courtyard area to eat, talk, and share stories about him. I can't remember the exact name of the place, but it had that polished, overly nice resort look, like it was trying hard to convince you it belonged there. But if you paid attention, really paid attention, you could feel something underneath it all, like the land didn't care how pretty they made it look. There was a heaviness to it, the kind you feel in your chest but can't explain. The moment we walked through the open-air lobby, something in me tensed. It wasn't grief. It wasn't like I'd known Kaleo well. But there was this shift in the air. The night had been warm all day, but inside the courtyard, the temperature seemed to drop. A cold gust slipped past my skin, even though the palms outside weren't moving. It was the kind of feeling you can't brush off, like your body knows something's wrong before your mind catches up. The courtyard was shaped like a shallow bowl, ringed with low walls and framed on one side by the river. Right at the edge stood a massive tree, easily older than anything else in sight. Its trunk was thick enough that four people couldn't wrap their arms all the way around it, and the branches stretched overhead like ribs curving in toward the ground. Most of the courtyard sat under that canopy, the leaves blocking out nearly all the moonlight. Someone mentioned quietly that the tree was planted to preserve mana, but they didn't go into details and I didn't ask. About halfway through the night, after hours of eating, drinking, and listening to stories, I stepped out for a smoke. The noise inside had started to wear on me, and my stomach felt heavy from the food. I thought some fresh air might help. Out near the river, away from the laughter and music, the silence felt strange, thick, like it was pressing against my ears. I walked toward the tree, flicked my lighter, and let the first drag settle into my lungs. That's when I saw them. At first, I thought it was just the way the shadows were falling. The courtyard lights were dim, and the branches twisted in all directions. But after a moment, my eyes adjusted, and the shapes didn't look like leaves anymore. They looked like people. They were sitting, no, perched, on the thickest branches, their bodies rigid, their heads tilted ever so slightly in my direction. I couldn't see their faces. They were swallowed in shadow. Their limbs looked too still, too stiff to belong to anything living. I tried to tell myself it was just my imagination. Maybe it was the uneven lighting or a trick of the moon slipping through the leaves. But the longer I looked, the less I believed it. There was a weight in the air now, something that made my skin feel tight, like it was trying to pull away from my bones. The cigarette in my hand burned down faster than I realized, ash spilling onto the ground. I thought about calling someone over, but I knew how that would look. Me, the outsider, interrupting a funeral gathering to talk about shapes in a tree. The figures didn't move, not even when a breeze finally stirred the branches. The leaves shifted and rustled, but their bodies stayed locked in place, watching. I couldn't see their eyes, but I knew. They were looking right at me. I backed away slowly, trying not to turn my back completely. By the time I reached the warm glow of the courtyard lights, the chill had lifted, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something had followed me. Inside, the noise of the family talking and laughing sounded almost too loud, like it was trying to cover something else. I didn't say anything that night. I didn't even look back toward the tree again. Later, as we were leaving, I passed the spot by the river one last time. The branches were empty. No shapes, no movement, just the tree, still and silent under the moon. But when we got into the car and drove away, I kept glancing into the rearview mirror, half expecting to see something sitting in the back seat, still watching. Story 8. I've never really been the kind of person who believes in all that ghost story nonsense. My life's always been pretty simple. Work, fish, have a pint or two, go home. I left Aberdeen years ago and settled in a small coastal village called St. Cyrus. Quiet little place, barely a few dozen houses scattered around. People keep to themselves, and that's how I like it. I work down at the harbor doing loading and repairs mostly. Nights are my favorite shift. Nobody around, just the sea breathing in and out. It's always been my way to find a bit of peace. But 2 winters ago, something happened that made me start avoiding the coast after dark. It was late March, and the cold still hadn't let up. That week, the sea was in one of its moods, angry and restless, hammering the shoreline like it had something to prove. That night, the pub shut earlier than usual because half the village had lost power. It wasn't unusual for the wind to knock things out. Storms around here like to remind you who's in charge. With nothing else to do, I figured I'd take my usual walk along the cliffs before heading home. That stretch of coastline always helped clear my head. I took the longer route, passing the old Salmon Bothy ruins and following the track toward the headland where the land just drops away into the North Sea. The wind cut hard enough to sting my face but wasn't strong enough to shove me around. Down below, the tide was low, pulling the water back and leaving dark ribbons of seaweed tangled over wet rock. I stood for a moment, breathing it in. That's when I noticed something moving along the beach. At first, I thought it was a person on horseback. It was tall, moving unevenly, and it caught what little moonlight there was. But the way it moved, there was something wrong about it. I've seen injured animals before, but this was off. Not just in pain, but unnatural, like the bones underneath were set wrong. I crouched, squinting into the dark. The shape was coming clearer now. It wasn't a rider and horse at all. It was one thing, fused together. Where the horse's head should have been, there was a human torso growing out of it, its arms hanging long and loose like wet ropes. The whole thing had no skin, just raw, slick muscle glistening red-black under the moon. The head of the human part rolled loosely, as though the neck was already broken. I froze. My breath caught in my chest. Every instinct I had screamed not to move, not to let it know I was there. But then it stopped, just below the cliff where I stood, and the head snapped upward. I saw its face, or what was left of one. No lips, just exposed teeth yellowed and cracked, and eyes glowing red like hot coals, flickering in their sockets as it stared straight at me. I remember trying to back away, keeping low, thinking maybe it hadn't really seen me. But the way it tilted its head told me otherwise, and then it made this sound. I can't explain it properly. It wasn't a scream, wasn't a roar. More like the sound of metal tearing, mixed with something dying slowly. It rattled in my chest and made my teeth feel loose. Then it started moving toward the cliff. Its horse legs moved wrong, bending the wrong way, joints popping as it clawed its way up the rock. It climbed as if it didn't care what gravity or physics had to say. I ran. Didn't think, just bolted, stumbling through the brush and over the coastal grass, almost going down more than once. I didn't stop until I hit the freshwater burn, the little stream that cuts through the moor before spilling into the sea near the chapel ruins. The moment I crossed, the air changed. The wind dropped to nothing. I heard no hooves, no movement behind me. Just silence. When I turned, it was standing right at the edge of the stream, stamping the ground like it was furious. It paced back and forth, but never stepped into the water. I could see steam coming off it in the cold night air, its jaw opening and closing as if it was choking. It reared back, thrashing, and for a moment I thought it was going to try to jump the burn. But instead, it just fell apart. Not like it disappeared, not like smoke, more like it rotted in fast forward. The human torso collapsed into the horse body, the whole thing melting into some black sludge that soaked into the ground until there was nothing left. I stood there for a long time before I could move. When I finally made it back to the village, my hands were numb, my legs scratched and bleeding from the run. I didn't tell anyone. Who was going to believe that? About a week later, livestock started dying in the area. Cows found bloated and twisted, seabirds washing up dead on the sand. The air carried a sour, salty stink that didn't fade for days. No one had an explanation. But I knew what I'd seen. I haven't set foot on that headland since. I don't walk the cliffs after dark anymore. The old stories people laugh about, Kelpies, Blue Men, the Nuckalavi, I don't laugh. Not anymore. Story 9. I grew up in Rankin Inlet, Nunavut, a small Inuit town on the edge of the Arctic, where the land is nothing but white and wind. Life there is quiet, harsh, and predictable until it isn't. The cold becomes something you stop noticing after a while, and the wind howls so often it starts to sound like voices in the distance. You tell yourself it's just the weather. I used to believe that without question, until something out on the tundra proved me wrong. It happened in February, 2 winters ago, when I was 21. My uncle had passed away not long before, and my dad suggested I take the snowmobile out to check on my uncle's old hunting cabin about 40 kilometers past Kamanirjuaq Lake. He thought a couple of days alone would help clear my head. I'd been in those hills countless times before, hunting caribou and seal with my cousins. I knew the trails, the weather patterns, the wildlife. Nothing about the trip seemed dangerous. The first sign that something was off came as soon as the cabin came into view. It looked untouched for years, windows crusted with thick ice, the front door slightly ajar. My uncle hadn't been out there in a long time, so I expected some wear, but the snow around the place stopped me in my tracks. Tracks everywhere, but not human. Narrow, oddly shaped, too long for a fox or a lynx. I tried not to study them too closely, telling myself they were just blown into strange patterns by the wind. Inside, everything seemed exactly as it should have been. The shelves still held tins of food, the oil lamp sat in its usual spot, and the rifle rack was empty, just like my uncle always left it. Still, the air felt wrong, stale and heavy, as if someone had been breathing it for too long without letting the cold in. I built a fire, ate, and tried to settle in, but I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. That night I woke to a sound outside. It wasn't the crunch of footsteps, it was slower, more deliberate, like something heavy being dragged through the snow. I stood at the door, headlamp sweeping across the endless white, but saw nothing except the faint shadow of the hills. I nearly went back inside when I caught sight of a figure far in the distance. It was crouched low, still, dark against the snow, and it wasn't wearing any kind of winter gear. I called out across the ice, but it didn't move. Then, without warning, it shifted.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Not walked, just changed. And in its place was a white Arctic fox bolting into the darkness. The next morning I checked for tracks. There were none. Not a fox print, not a boot print, nothing but the faint depressions from my own steps the day before. I told myself it was lack of sleep, the kind of hallucination the cold sometimes plays on you. But by evening, as the blue twilight settled in over the tundra, I saw it again. This time it stood upright, closer than before, and it didn't move when I called out. It just tilted its head slightly, and something in my gut twisted in a way I can't explain. Its body shifted then, arms bending backward like the joints were breaking, legs stretching too long for any normal person. The outline of its head lengthened into something animal, but the change was so slow and deliberate it made my skin crawl. It turned away, not running, but moving with that same dragging gait I'd heard the night before, disappearing behind a low hill. That night, the whispering started. It wasn't coming from outside. It was inside the cabin with me. Soft, constant, like someone murmuring to themselves just out of earshot. My flashlight cut across the small room, but there was nothing there. When I turned toward the back window, my heart stopped. A face was pressed to the glass from the outside, skin pale, almost gray, with no eyebrows and eyes so black they seemed to swallow the light. They were wide, unblinking, fixed directly on me. I stumbled backward, tripping over the stool. When I looked again, the window was empty, just a sheet of frost where the face had been. I didn't open the door. I didn't move until the first thin light of morning pushed its way over the horizon. I left most of my gear behind, started the snowmobile, and didn't stop until I was back in town. When I told my father what happened, he didn't seem shocked. He said I'd seen an Ijirak, something that watches people, sometimes follows them back. Some say they were once human but got lost and now wander the land, mimicking the living. Others believe they're just another trick of the tundra, the way snow and shadow can fool the mind after too many hours alone. He handed me an old carved bone pendant on a strip of rawhide and told me to keep it with me and not to look for that place again. I haven't been past the lake since, and when the wind at night starts to sound like voices, I close my eyes and remind myself it's just the weather. Most of the time, I believe it.